Welcome back to Arsenal for Democracy. I'm your host, Bill Humphrey. Still on the line from Idaho is Sarah, filling in as guest co-host this week. Sarah, interesting things have been happening in Idaho recently.
Right. Otter's been in the news.
Governor Butch Otter.
Right. For being against same-sex marriage in Idaho. He and Lawrence Wasden filed an appeal for a stay after Candy Dale's ruling that would strike down the constitutional amendment that was voted in the year 2006. But that paled in comparison to the coverage the Republican gubernatorial primary debate got. It made national news, unfortunately, and it was pretty embarrassing. But incumbent Butch Otter participated in a debate against his strongest opponent, Russ Fulcher, and two fringe candidates, Harley Brown and Walt Bays.
Well, see, now you toss that off like, oh, it was Governor Otter, and then it was this guy Fulcher, who's a legitimate candidate, and then it was just these other two guys, or whatever.
Well, Brown and Bays are two very interesting characters. Harley Brown, he is a motorcycle aficionado, and he even got his name changed to Harley. And Walt Bays is a strong pro-life candidate. It says in Wikipedia he's a perennial candidate, but since he's fringe, I didn't really know that. And the thing is that Otter only agreed to participate in the debate if Brown and Bays were included. And his opponent, Russ Fulcher, claimed that Otter did this to take time away from having to defend his administration because Fulcher was planning on being really tough on him, especially in regards to creating the state marketplace or the state exchange in accordance with the Affordable Care Act, as well as Common Core in education. So those were the two huge contentious issues, even though, you know, they're not really state-controlled aspects, so it's hard to say what Fulcher thinks governors should do.
So basically, Governor Otter's position was that implementing things that are federally required, like participation in the Affordable Care Act exchanges or Common Core academic curricula, that he has to implement those because he's legally required to. And you said his opponent disagrees?
Yes. They've been running ads saying, oh, get Otter out because he obviously is not Idaho's leader because he, you know, fails to break these laws. Essentially, they want him to just, enact nullification against them, I suppose.
Right.
And so, yeah. And so in the midst of all that pageantry, I suppose you could call it, Otter really didn't look that great, and Idaho didn't look that great. And it showed in the primary numbers. Who knows what it would be if it just had been Otter and Fulcher in the debate. But Otter only got 51.3% of the Republican vote. Fulcher got 43.5%.
So that's pretty close for an incumbent governor who's reasonably popular.
Right. And it was surprising to me. I thought Otter, since he's fairly well-established and fairly conservative, even under Idaho standards, I thought he would sail by with much higher numbers, but he didn't. And so I'm excited, I guess I'm looking forward to seeing how the rest of the election season plays out.
I'm assuming there's not very strong challenge from the Democrats this year.
No. Perennially, IDP, Idaho Democratic Party, they're kind of poorly organized, I hate to say it, and they have trouble running strong candidates. And even if there are sympathetic voters, they just can't manage to get enough support to really be contenders in races. I think they're trying to just work on organization first and strong candidates second, and we'll see how that plays out. I think they are more unified than they have been in past years, but hard to say with how entrenched the Republican Party is in Idaho.
Well, I think that speaks to issues in a lot of states that have been Republican dominated for quite a while, which is that it's that debate about, do you try to find a really strong candidate who can have, you know, have coattails or get into office and then provide a rallying point or whatever, or do you focus on the party organization first? And I tend to side almost exclusively with the party organization first, candidate second approach. I think that we've kind of seen it play out in Texas along those lines, which is that a lot of people pinned their hopes on Wendy Davis to try to lift them out of the mire in the Democratic side in Texas. And, you know, I mean, she's nationally popular for her abortion position, but or, you know, being pro-choice, but she's also, you know, very conservative on a lot of other things. I mean, she's, you know, pretty solid gun advocate for people who are into that, which is not, you know, the rest of the country, of her supporters at least, tend not to be pro-gun. And obviously in state, that's an important difference, I guess. But, you know, we've periodically been checking back in on her, but it seems like she's maybe not even winning women in Texas right now, if I remember the last polling correctly. Obviously, there's plenty of conservative women there. But it's like, okay, well, now you've dumped huge amounts of money into her race, pinning everything on her. She's not, as far as I can tell, maybe I'm wrong on this, feel free to send corrections to aftradio@gmail.com. But my understanding is that she's building an organization around herself. She's not building like a statewide party organization, which is understandable, I guess, but not necessarily the best course, in my opinion, from a broader, bigger picture. But she's effectively taking all this these resources from people around the rest of the country who could be donating to, you know, candidates for governor in Massachusetts or Arkansas or Michigan or Maine, or, you know, a whole bunch of these other states. There's a relatively short list of competitive seats for governor this year, and I'm not seeing Texas as one of them. There are plenty of lower-level local Democratic people who are quite credible in Texas, but the question is, can they build up, you know, help build up a credible operation that's not centered on one person? And I think this is a longer development in the kind of arc of American politics, but you've got these bigger and bigger, more and more expensive races that you have to win before you win the nomination in your party, which means that you have to then set up a whole organization that's separate from the party. And then it all just kind of fizzles away when you're gone, because it was basically a party of one. And, you know, some of those people will all go over to other organizations, but they tend to fragment out, right? You know, a lot of the, like, you know, some of the Howard Dean people, for example, and, you know, go to the Obama campaign or the Edwards campaign, right? There's not even consolidation there. And that kind of thing, it tends to be a fairly frequent occurrence when you have these sort of things that are built around one particular person. And it's, again, it's an understandable response to the system that we've created. But the question is it the best system for these parties, for the candidates in general, for the people that support those parties, and for arguably democracy in general? I mean, on the presidential side, the great innovation of having primaries that helped select the nominees and actually made those matter, right? Those really start to have an impact in the 1960 race on the Democratic side, not so much on the Republican side because it was pretty much Nixon already. And then in 64 on the Republican side, that becomes hugely important. The whole Stop Goldwater movement fails because they basically didn't understand how to, you know, beat him in primaries. And then you get 68, you have the situation where, you know, someone who hasn't really, I don't think, won any primaries, the vice president, Hubert Humphrey, ends up, as the presidential nominee, and people get all upset and say, oh, well, we want more role by the Democratic voters and the Democratic base. We should have more primaries, et cetera, et cetera. You get those big reforms that come in around 72, And then the guy who wrote the rules, George McGovern, the senator from South Dakota, becomes the nominee and gets slaughtered against Nixon in the 72 election. And then everyone's like, okay, well, we can't do that. So then they rewrote the rules to create like superdelegates and stuff to take back some of the power away from the primaries. But so there's been this sort of seesawing effect, but the inevitable consequence of letting everyone decide like that without having any party resources going to these candidates or anything for, you know, a year before they get the nomination and then are supposedly fused to the party means that everyone's just outside of the party doing their own thing. And then you wonder why we get to a situation where you have members of the president's own party in Congress being not only not on board with a specific item, but totally opposed to his entire agenda. And then it's like, oh, well, Washington is broken. Yeah, I don't know. I wonder how that happened, because no one even in his own party is willing to go along with it because everyone's got their own little thing going on. And that's the problem that you have when you try to set up a system in a huge country like the United States that is allowing everyone to, you know, participate in the system like that. I mean, I get the reason why we want that participation, but then what are the unintended consequences of that?
Right.
Here's another thought that I want to pitch to you while we're just kind of on the, you know, random off-track topic.
Okay.
This is something that Persephone and I had been discussing, past co-host of the show. So in the United Kingdom, obviously a much smaller country, they have more, by a significant margin, more members of parliament than there are members of Congress. Now, some people say, oh, well, we should have fewer members of Congress because there's just it's too many or whatever. And then some people are, oh, well, we should have 9,000 members like China. Okay, not really, but China does have 1,000 members in its Congress. But, you know, that's a little bit unwieldy or whatever. So here's my pitch is this is a potential way you fix a lot of these issues that we've got with our liberal democracy right now in the United States is you say, let's add more, not a huge number more, but let's add, you know, several hundred more people to the House of Representatives. And that makes all of the districts necessarily smaller. Generally, a lot of them are going to be a lot geographically smaller, but at minimum, they'll have a much smaller population, which means that a higher percentage of the people in that population will actually get to meet on a regular basis their member of Congress. Not just the activist people who go to everything anyway, but regular everyday people in these districts will get more opportunities for, you know, to really interact with their members of Congress. And this is probably good in general for the system, right? Because we want people that we actually know and all that sort of thing. But my idea is that this would affect the campaign finance side because it would be a lot harder to do expensive TV advertising in these races if there were more members of Congress. If you had more House members, the districts are smaller, then everything would have to be a lot more retail campaign based rather than, you know, doing TV ad wars or whatever. And that would reduce all the campaign spending and then people wouldn't have to raise as much money. And that would, it seems to me, solve a whole bunch of problems at one time. And by, you know, really decentralizing these out to these geographically small areas or whatever, yes, it would mean that people would have to get to their, they would be able to get to know their representatives better, but it would also mean that those representatives would probably be more dependent on the party structure than on just, you know, individual force of personality campaigns.
I actually think that sounds really great. I've actually seen Raul Labrador walking around Boise. I didn't talk to him because I have no desire to speak with him, but I've never seen my member of Congress, Mike Simpson, wandering around Boise. Boise's interesting because depending on where you live, the city is split into separate districts. So I guess that's why I could see one, but not the other. Oh, and Idaho only has two districts for the whole state. So it that's a lot of space for one congressman to, you know, meet his constituents and whatnot. So I would like smaller districts. And then it seems like you don't have, you still would probably have gerrymandering and locked in districts, but it seems like it could be more prone to change and getting affected by voter activity and, you know, activism.
So, right. I mean, yeah. It would be an interesting question of how you would divide those districts up. But I think that if you had a system where it was a little bit more based directly on really getting to know the person that's running for office and really talking to them about the issues and that kind of thing, I think it's a little bit harder to then just like go to Washington and do whatever. Right.
Right.
You got to stick to what you said you were going to do or be able to explain convincingly to the voters why you did something else.
Right. And also, you know, it's a huge initial buy-in basically to run for office anymore. So it right. seems like if you make it so money is, or at least large sums of money are less of an issue, then, you know, that would democratize the whole thing. And
right. That's if it costs less thing. Money to run, then it's less of an entry barrier that you have to be financially at a certain point.
Right. Right. Yes.
So interesting ideas being pitched here in Arsenal for Democracy. These we're just bouncing these ideas off this week as we close out the spring season on WVUD, and then we'll be moving into the summer season. Arsenal for Democracy, by the way, folks, is going to be continuing all the way through the summer. We've just confirmed that last week. So, you know, lots more episodes. This is now episode 85. So, I don't know if we'll be up to 100 by the time we get through the summer. But I'm hoping so. Or at least, you know, early fall if we continue then as well. But Arsenal for Democracy will be right back in just a moment with more. But you can also go to arsenalfordemocracy.com at any time to get in touch with us or to read news articles about things that we don't get to on the show or more about the things that we do get to on the show. And also, we typically put links for every news story that we talked about on the show. We put them in the recap of the episode, or if you want to stream it online, you can do that there if you want to re-listen to it. So arsenalfordemocracy.com, WVUD. We will be right back with more analysis in just a moment.